You're listening to highlights from OTB AM, Off the Ball's new daily breakfast show. It's live every weekday morning from 7:45. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or listen live at offtheball.com.
Andy Dunn is here to talk to us about the weekend's rugby. A bit of a mixed response, I would say, to the Fiji game. A lot of people going, oh, this is terrible, why the hell didn't we kill them? But like, Fiji ranked 9th in the world, ahead of Argentina, had all their superstars playing, really went for it. And I was at the game and they hung around for ages afterwards, signing autographs and meeting their fans. So like, it really meant something to them.
Yeah, it's a huge result for them, even though they lost, to show how close they are to a side like Ireland, who are rated, albeit we played what is our second string. But there's 14 players took to the field for Fiji who either ply their trade in Pro 12, Top 14 or the English Premiership. So they know what they're about.
Yeah, you know? And they were pretty good.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the cliche is they're creative, but, you know, they were actually, their scrum was reasonably good. I thought their line-out was quite impressive. Very simple line-out, very effective. They got the ball in early, used their athleticism and speed and reflexes to win a lot of easy, simple line-out ball. You see a lot of teams now overcomplicate the line-out. So those type of exchanges in set-piece play, as well as their obviously standard kind of creative stuff that they do, probably went unnoticed. Yeah.
So everybody also is talking about these video sessions that Josh Smith's going to have with the players. What's going to be in today's that is the video nasty?
I would have thought our inability to hold on to the ball on occasions. I think he'll probably go to town on one or two players who attempted offloads that either were
into touch.
Yeah, poor old Stuart McCluskey, I think, is going to shrink his way into that room, judging by what players talk about with the now famous reviews. But I'd also like to think he will encourage guys to look to do that when it's on, because if we go back to that that Argentinian defeat in the last World Cup, we lost to the Argentinians because they passed out of the tackle, and they were able to break us down in a very simple way by doing that. It's not an area with the least amount of offloads in the last World Cup, in terms of the home nations, so it's something he probably needs to encourage as well. So hopefully he won't go to town on him too much in that video review.
Yeah, how do those video reviews go from what you've heard? Like, is it kind of a lot of one-to-one basis? Is it kind of a group chat with the video, or how does it work?
From what I gather, he'll have no qualms just singling out a mistake and just asking a player, you know, what was he thinking? In front of everyone, yeah. Maybe some slow motion to really
back
make the toes
the
curl. Yeah, but I think he's doing it ultimately. I don't think he's doing it to hang anyone. I think he's doing it to affect and a change and improvement. And it is, I mean, as far back as, was it Kevin Heffernan started doing video analysis
for
the Dubs in
right.
the 70s? And, you know, it's not a new thing, but I do think it's a very effective way to learn. Because in front of your peers, there is nothing worse than watching a mistake in slow motion or being asked why you did the mistake. So yeah,
let's talk about some of the positives. Who stood out for you? Who are the players who are going to be looking at that game going, yeah, I did well?
I suppose starting from the forward pack, Andrew Porter. I think he's a great prospect. He has moved from loose head to tight head, which is notoriously difficult to task because your scrummage, the requirements of the scrummage are very, very different. And to do that change at international level, I'd imagine, is twice as difficult.
Yeah.
But he's got real potential. He's played for UCD in the last two or three seasons of the All-Ireland League at club level. And he's a super player around the field. Very, very dynamic, very good ball carrier. And he's got very good handling skills. You probably don't see that at stepping up a level against the likes of Fiji, because the demands on him at the scrum are so big. He was probably so tired, I would imagine, just to get up and try and contribute around the field was probably a step too far. But I would say in, you know, 1 or 2 years time, when he's got used to that, he could be a real dark horse for the next World Cup.
Is there any benefit in sticking him in the team next week as well, to go, look, that was Fiji, but this is Argentina, and actually we're trying to cheat time here to make sure that we have much greater, like, we know Tadhg Furlong's going to be that guy probably for the next 10 years, but having someone to replace him who's of equal standard, or even to push him on in training.
I would hazard a guess they won't do it against the Argentinians, because they're just so good at scrummaging, and it would, I think, probably be a bit unfair from an expectations level to throw them in.
And if you get hammered, it's a physical or psychological setback.
Absolutely. I suppose you talk about developing the ecosystem within the squad. You want to make sure a young guy like that has confidence, and he's probably going to have a lot of confidence after Fiji. If he was to sit on the bench and maybe come off the bench for the last 15 against Argentina, he's probably going to be walking on air by the end of the November internationals, you know. So I wouldn't probably throw him in the deep end next week, but it's certainly a big plus to see a guy like that behind, you know, what is probably one of the best props in Europe, if not the world at the moment.
There was a lot of expectation about him just because of his talent, and to make that step, like, obviously it suggests that we're starting to get to a point where we're managing our squad properly. Because you look at Andrew Conway, for example, man of the match in the game, and Conway has to leave Leinster to get the game time for Munster, and kind of needs a couple of things to happen at Munster. Like, Felix Jones kind of has to get injured and retire before he starts getting game time too. But you'd hope that we're starting to get to that point where the window for the Andrew Conways doesn't shut, and we keep them in the system and we start to reap the benefits when they're 25 to 28.
Absolutely, yeah. I suppose what you're talking about is how strong our squad is now. How many realistic or viable options have we who can start a Six Nations game or a World Cup game? And I think that's growing steadily. I read a lot of stuff yesterday that I think was probably overly negative and saying, you know, these guys aren't going to put pressure on the incumbents. But, you know, where do you can't win, you can't lose. Like, we've got to throw guys in. And we've got to learn from the previous World Cup. We've got to allow guys time to bed in. And the Conway example, he's been really impressive, I think, in the last few weeks. Sweetenham's another example. I think Sweetenham is a real Joe Schmidt type of player because of his mistake ratio or mistake index or whatever way you put it on data. He's not making many mistakes, and that's the type of player Joe likes. He's not probably, I mean, he did everything was asked of him. He tackled Nadolo every time he had the opportunity. The only time Nadolo got around him was when Nadolo used very subtle skills. Yeah. And he actually grubber kicked and collected again. It was no fault of Sweetland's. But those type of players coming through are a huge boost for the squad, yeah.
The other thing about it as well is you refer to some of the negative criticism that the team got, but it is essentially the second string team. Like, if we have a so-called hybrid team going into the Argentina game, like, those new players will suddenly benefit from having some of the best players in the world around them, particularly in the pack.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think the one, I suppose the real bad news from it is Carberry's broken arm. If we were going to pick a hybrid side against Argentina, I think it would have been lovely to see Carberry get a chance to play outside Conor Murray, because
Johnny Sexton would not have been happy.
No.
Sitting on the bench going, what?
No, but I think, I mean, I'm sure Joe would have communicated to him. I think I think that would have been a good opportunity to see him in okay, he played against USA in his first start, Joey, back in June, and documented difficult day out.
3-2 intercepts, was it?
Yeah. But he really looked the part for stages of the game against Fiji. It would have been nice to see him in that kind of hybrid type, close to first team, close to second team selection. But he hasn't played outside Murray, and I think that makes a big difference for a 10. Marmion was one player on Saturday who I felt probably didn't step up to the plate. In terms of his ability, he's one of these players, he's an excellent rugby player, but is he an excellent scrum half or game manager? I'm not sure yet. You know, his execution in terms of box kicks, some of his choices around the ruck.
Can you get better at that stuff?
Oh, you can, yeah. I mean, it's very similar to playing out half as well. Ollie Campbell used to always say you need at least 3 80 minutes in a row in a half-back position, certainly in a decision-making position on the field. 3 80 minutes in a row before you've even settled into first, second gear and got some level of comfort with directing people around the field. It's very difficult to go into an executive decision-making part of the field and be comfortable when you're getting 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. So certainly I think Marmion could improve, but in terms of how he directs the team it's not quite on a level with Conor Murray at the moment.
I think he's lost a little bit of ground to Luke McGrath as well. I'm not sure, yeah. Is that fair to say? Like, it seems that the gap is already there between himself and Conor Murray, but then he put him into a Joe Schmidt system and yeah. The gap has widened again because his box kicking isn't up to scratch.
Yeah, I think it is fair and true to say it. Yeah, I would say it's very clear now that Conor's first choice. I would say Luke's a clear cut second and Kieran probably third, even on the back of that performance, unfortunately for him. Carberry's broken arm probably throws up more questions now for the Six Nations, but yeah. Obviously Ian Keatley is next in line, and he's doing a pretty solid job anyway. Not easy kicks in the situation.
No, they weren't.
You can't just gloss over that.
No.
And he's consistently doing that well.
What about Carberry's place kicking? Because obviously it has been a bit of an issue, and I guess it's an issue because he doesn't do it in games that often. So what, like, obviously you fix that by spending hours and hours with kicking coach, but you kind of need to ask Leinster, could you mind letting him take some kicks there, lads? Would that be all right?
Well, the alternative is just get on with it and stop focusing on the fact he doesn't place kick. Stephen Larkham was 120 caps for Australia as an out half and never took a place kick in his life. Nobody had a problem with that. Bowden Barrett has an awful success rate. Nobody's a problem with that. I mean, if we try and make Joey Carby like Johnny Sexton, we're going to fail. And I don't see why we have to make everyone a prototype of Johnny Sexton.
So get Conor Murray to take the kicks, or
get someone else to do it. Yeah. They're all international players, and I think people tend to focus on, okay, he's hit a post, he's missed. Who says he has to take the place kicks in the first place? He can do things nobody else can, and let him at it.
Yeah, that's pretty radical, though, right? Like,
well, yeah. When you think it's international football as well. You'd like to think there's at least two or three guys, although I can't name any off the top of my head. But you know, at any provincial level, there's got to be guys who are also going out and practicing their place kicking.
Yeah,
I do think it's uniquely. Well, it's not uniquely Irish, but it's certainly Northern Hemisphere that has to place kick.
Yeah,
because down in the
southern hemisphere, French would obviously have nines who would have kicked.
Nines, 15s, centres. You know.
Yeah.
It's. I think it's something that we probably just need to take off his shoulders and allow him play the type of game. I mean, I think some of the calls where he got injured or where he nearly got knocked unconscious before that, I think they were the same calls on repeat. That, I mean, he sliced them open with that play. It's the Sexton loop play, and it was superb. And he managed to convert a line break into a score, which is harder again to do. It doesn't always convert.
The Sweetenham try.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he then recalled it and called it again. And I think there was an element of trying to replicate what Johnny would do in those scenarios. Whereas if he'd have just read it
himself,
used his own instincts, I don't believe he'd have called those things. I think we need to give the guy a bit of freedom to express himself within what is the team structure. Maybe take the place kicking duties away from him and we could reap the rewards.
Is there something about the number 10 jersey when it comes to Ireland that just leaves itself much more open to big hits?
I think the way the game has gone, I think it's not just Ireland. I think that channel now, your 10 has to be a super defender. Mm. He can't be the old speed bump that he used to be in the past. I think your 10 has got to be pretty brave and physical, and teams are going to attack that channel a lot, certainly that 10-12 channel. So I don't think that's just an Irish worry or concern.
We're seeing the benefits of Cian Healy losing the weight and coming back from injury, in that Jack McGrath isn't at the same level that he was at when he was at the Lions, and just one of those players who probably has a bit of a hangover from it. And instead of us being completely screwed by that, we have this unbelievable angry talent who just wants to go out and crush the opposition every time he gets the ball.
Yeah, and I think it's very instructive to see that his weight loss has helped him. I think it went under the radar that around 2010, 2011, the All Blacks completely started to trim down. So they tend to be like the market leaders in terms of innovation. They were one of the lightest packs at the last two World Cups, and they won the last two World Cups. It's probably a stat that doesn't get much airtime, but I think there's huge value in some of our front five players, even our back rowers, dropping a few kilograms. It doesn't mean you sacrifice strength. The strength and conditioning coaches of this day and age are so scientific. They'd be well aware that shredding a couple of kilos does not actually affect your strength. So it, if anything, makes you more mobile and converts your strength into a more dynamic and powerful type of attribute. Yeah.
Yeah, and he looked sensational. The try they got called back that he scored in the ground, like you could hear the whistle had gone, but a bunch of the Fijians hadn't, and he kept killing them.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like...
Well, he said on social media he still reckons it was a try, yeah, with a wink. But yeah, it would have been a nice one to get given for him.
The back row is obviously the most competitive. The back row and the back three at the moment are the kind of most competitive, although it feels like maybe the back three is beginning to emerge into a... This is the first choice back three and here's the first choice subs. With the back row as well, you kind of felt like Reece Ruddock was on the verge of putting pressure on Peter O'Mahony, but maybe that didn't quite happen at the weekend.
Yeah, well, I think Reece, again, if I was to talk about Sweetenham, the similar kind of approach that Schmidt would take to a player like Ruddock, he does exactly what Joe wants more often than not.
Yeah.
He mightn't do the extraordinary, but he, in terms of fitting into what Joe's structure is or how he wants certain parts of his game implemented, you know, it, with absolute exactness, he's the guy that Joe would look at as a go-to. He probably, I wouldn't say he did anything to challenge O'Mahony right now, but I think he's a very, very viable option. I think Jack Conan, on the other hand, albeit, I mean... The try he got was very simple. I mean, it was a nice pickup, and he was unopposed. But I do think he's got a lot of potential. He's again much like Porter, much like Carberry. He's come through the club system, which is actually really heartening to see. He played in Old Belvedere. I was actually coaching him
four
or 5 years ago.
Okay.
So I picked him for his first All Ireland League game. So. That's where he learnt everything, obviously.
There you go.
But, no, even at that stage, he was he's a very mature guy at 19, 20, coming into senior club rugby. I think he's the type of player who carries himself very well in the professional squad environment, which actually matters, you know, in terms of when you're in a decision-making role, has the guy got a level of maturity and responsibility?
Yeah.
And do we trust him to make serious calls at line-out or scrum time? Conan is that type of player. He's very much captaincy material, you know, for any teams he plays with.
It feels like he's probably a year away from being able to deliver on all of his potential on a week-to-week basis over the full 80 minutes. You see snatches of games where he's absolutely sensational, or you see a two-game stretch where he's great, but over the course of the season he hasn't put it all together just yet.
Yeah, and again, I think that's probably something that just comes with time, building up a physical resilience and a mental resilience to the challenges of a kind of a relentless season that is happening now for guys at that level. To put 25, 30 games back-to-back, maybe like Heaslip when he was injury-free and at his peak. So very few guys can do that from an injury profile point of view, let alone performance. But I do think Jack has the physical characteristics to maybe do that in a year or two as well, yeah.
So he's second choice number eight at this stage. That the back row is probably what it was for the...
Yeah, it's hard to call. Like, who's second? I mean, if you look at... Yeah, this standard, there's a lot of options. But I think he's probably just got in there on his dynamism, yeah, and his ball carrying.
It was a bit of a letdown, though, wasn't it, the breakdown on Saturday night? Because, like, you can put forward this argument that Fiji were well up for it, but I don't really buy that, because this is a second Ireland team. These are all fighting for a green jersey. Like, is it just potentially the fact that Peter O'Mahony and CJ Sander are so bloody good in this area that no matter who else is playing, the breakdown will always look bad in comparison to when those two guys are on the pitch?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, like, we had one or two counter-rucking situations where the Fijians were so aggressive and their body height was so low to the ground and they blitzed us when it was our ball. That's, you don't see that a whole lot anymore, not at an international level. I think it was kind of a trend for about 4 or 5 years, counter-rucking and shoving a team off their own ball, and then everyone just got used to it and said, right, that's not happening anymore. And the likes of O'Mahony and Stander, who are so good close to the ground, means they shore up our ball and we secure possession. And it looks easy, but their actual execution of it is brilliant. So probably just missed that on Saturday with the new combinations. Geordie Murphy hasn't played a huge amount of rugby, although he was, you know, he was right in the mix this time last year when we played in Soldier Field. But he's coming back from an ACL reconstruction. It's difficult to hit the ground running and be maybe as effective at the breakdown as the lads have been, having had six, seven games before internationals to get that strong.
Do you expect many changes for the Argentina game? Like, if you're Doug Schmidt, what do you do? What do you want to see from that game?
you know, I always get the impression Joe, first and foremost, is, wants to see a win just to keep momentum, because for all the damage a loss causes versus performance, I think he's pretty keen as a numbers man, safety first. He'll want to see a win, which I would suggest. That's stating the obvious. They all want to see a win, but I don't think he's going to sacrifice risk. I think he's going to pick his best side, and he's going to give them a run out before the Six Nations. I personally would love to see a kind of a hybrid selection again and develop, and you know, another 7-8 names with another kind of stint at the international level, but I don't see it happening. I think he's going to go back to basics and pick his strength, strongest side.
Fiji ranked higher in the world than Argentina as well. I was watching their game against England 2 weeks ago, and I'm not sure if this kind of symptomatic of Argentina as a whole at the moment, but Juan Martín Hernández looked terrible off the tee. Mm. Buffelli took a couple of kicks, and I'm definitely not going to call him terrible off the tee, because I'll eat my words in years to come, because he's going to be one of the best players in the world. Mm. But is that an area that they're certainly struggling with, that if we are ill-disciplined we can get away with it?
Well, it depends. I mean, I'm not sure if Hernandez fit.
I didn't actually see it at the weekend. Potentially he got injured.
If he is fit, he's Mercurian. You know, I wouldn't think we could afford to be ill-disciplined and get away with it just because they had a bad kicking display previously.
Yeah,
the likes of Hernandez, he could roll out of bed the opposite way and knock over 9. So, there's a lot of ability in the Argentinian side, and again they're very dangerous in attack. I think they've kept true to their creative approach in the last couple of years that did so well for them in the last World Cup. So I think they're going to be dangerous against us. Yeah,
should be a good game anyway. More analysis to come on the radio tonight from 7 o'clock.
You've been listening to a highlights podcast from OTBAM. If you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook, Twitter and YouTube every morning from 7:45 a.m.